Hello again, and welcome to Coffee Science Guru, the podcast by 7 Miles Coffee Roasters dedicated to all things coffee. It's a beautiful Friday morning here.
It's great.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, it's, I guess, I don't know, before we begin proper, what have you guys been up to? Julian, what's you been up to this morning?
Well, not so much this morning, but yesterday I had a work experience trainee, age 16, who, together with others who've been training all week, spent several hours with me in the QA and discussed all matters to do with coffee origins and applications for it in today's marketplace and so on. He was an intelligent young man.
Yeah, sounds good.
And I very much enjoyed spending time with him. Today I was back on the old routine, which was tasting 40 different coffees produced from the roasting of done yesterday.
Yep.
And I've only just finished that a few minutes before we sat down here to do it. It was actually very good today. We had a nice Colombian single origin and a Burundi.
Oh, nice.
Good. Roasting for next month's single origins, of course.
Yeah, they were very tasty and nicely acidic without being over the top.
Yeah.
And in fact, I spirited away a jar of the ground coffee, which I'm going to take have over the weekend.
Yeah, that's right. You're on live saying that now. We've got a record.
The origins for next month are very accidentally Christmassy. Like the tasting notes that we were getting, they were all like dried fruits and very like winey and boozy.
Right. I thought we could probably put together a Christmas blend with some combination of the three or four that we already have going through. Yeah. What about you, Josh? What's your morning been like?
This morning was good. Worked in the window, made some coffees. It was a little bit quiet this week. I think things are starting to ramp up into silly season.
Yep.
So people are saving their pennies, which is good.
I spent all mine.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we've had a couple of people from interstate, two of the guys from Brisbane and one from Canberra coming to do training with Maddie. So they spent the last 2 days doing the intermediate SCA filter class, brewing class. Which was cool. It's always interesting doing brewing classes with baristas and roasters and stuff.
Well, especially in a country like Australia, where we don't do a whole lot of brewing.
Yeah, it's a lot of different terminology.
Yeah.
Even though it's like stuff that we all do and it's very relatable to espresso once you put different terminology to stuff it.
Well, even doing it in Australia, right? I mean, Australia has a very different kind of palate. I think my understanding is Matt's actually had to adapt it a little bit for brew recipes and a whole bunch of other things to suit the Australian palate.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's like, this is what they recommend, but it's kind of slightly different here to different tastes and to different water and...
Yeah.
Different machines, obviously espresso machines react different to different water than sort of batch brewers some of the time.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting. It's good having them down because we went last night to a presentation by...
I'm just going
to
close the door.
By Daniel. Ah, good idea. Yeah, by Daniel who he was doing it on behalf of Anthem, the company who manufactures grinders, talking a whole bunch about chemistry and... You know, how grind size affects a whole bunch of things. It was a good presentation overall. It's nice to see particle size distributions. I put a couple of questions out there.
So many graphs.
Yeah, so many graphs.
Well, we've certainly learned a lot over the last few years about the relationship between espresso machines and water and grind and that type of thing, which we didn't know before.
And still learning.
I mean, we keep bringing up the fourth and fifth wave on this podcast, and I think it's not going to be a competition on who does the best coffee anymore. It's going to be who has the most interesting scientific information, like who has the cutting edge technology and doing the best experiments to get like...
Yeah, and speaking of experiments, you know, I mean, one of the things that we've been doing and actually the focus of today's podcast is looking at coffee freshness.
Great segue, Josh.
Yeah, thanks. Well done, Josh. Yeah, well done.
Always
good. Oh, well done.
Definitely intentional.
Oh, yeah, you did a good job. I know. You didn't plan that. We're talking about freshness in coffee, and it's one of the things, one of the first things I did when I came here. People talked about freshness and variations therein. People saying some coffee should be, you know, rested for 6 months. Some people say 6 weeks. Some people say 1 week. Some people say, I'd love to have it the next day, please.
Yeah, as fresh as possible.
As fresh as possible. I mean, Josh, I mean, your take on freshness, I mean, what was, before we did these studies, kind of what was the focus or the source of the contention between?
I have been fortunate enough as a barista to use coffee that has been aged before being sent out, and coffee that has been shipped interstate from fresh. So sometimes it comes pre-aged just due to transit times, and sometimes it's been next day roasted, and then it's you kind of figure out, maybe not scientifically, but just anecdotally, about what certain coffees or how fresh coffees react differently, on, at least in an espresso machine. So you tend to get a lot more crema, a lot more gas, a lot more carbon dioxide-y flavors, which I've always described as being grassy or green. Some people say salty as well. So typically for a really fresh coffee, you dose a little bit less in the basket, you pull a little bit less flavor, a little bit less beverage out, kind of run the shots a bit tighter, and then as it ages, you can kind of extract a bit more and you can fit a bit more in the basket without it sort of coming out really gassy.
Right.
And being inconsistent when it's fresh as well.
Yeah.
It tends to settle over that 2 to 3 weeks, and then you kind of notice a bit of drop of brightness in the cup after that third week, typically.
Okay.
No, I mean, all of that is, you know, a far cry from what we thought we knew about coffee only a few years ago.
Yeah.
Particularly from a barista's point of view.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. What was beforehand? Okay, just what was the impressions or the sort of the understandings before that, do you think?
Well, I think it was very simple. I mean, you took hold of coffee and you whacked as much coffee in the basket as you get, pressed it down hard and waited for the result. And,
That's right. Good luck.
But as for scientific descriptions thereof, not a lot, I think.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, even roast dates on roasted coffee. You'd have a use-by or a best-before, because you should have that on products that are food-grade, I believe, is the right way of doing it. But having a roast date on a coffee when it was roasted, so you know how old it is relatively new to the industry.
Of course, we're essentially here talking about espresso coffee, but if you take the other side of the coin, as it were, and go to Europe and see how much filtered coffee of various kinds is used under non-pressurized systems, I think you'll find that the Germans, many, many years ago, had done all sorts of scientific work on the extraction rates of coffee under those non-pressurized systems, which is a totally different kettle of fish.
I actually haven't done any research on that. I think being in Australia, focusing so much on espresso, we always look at that, which is, I'm not going to say a more complex system, but it is slightly. There's more variables that kind of make a huge difference with small changes.
Less time.
Yeah. And sort of speaking of time, you know, when we did our study on freshness, I mean, we were looking sort of at not necessarily shelf life in terms of when is it safe to drink coffee, but thinking about shelf life in terms of when is the right time when we would say coffee is too stale. And what does stale even mean? It was interesting doing a research into the background there and sort of seeing how most academic papers at least treated it. People generally considered coffee to be too stale when at least 50% of the tasters could detect a stale note in the coffee. And if you do a bit more research, you'll find that it's interesting, actually. One of the primary compounds responsible for the stale aroma and the stale taste is a compound called furfural mercaptan, which is kind of interesting. If it's below, there's a threshold. At 5 parts per billion, we find that furfural mercaptan will give a distinct sulfury, old, stale type odor. But below that threshold, it actually tastes and smells like fresh coffee.
Yeah,
so
right.
Between 0.1 part per billion and 5. So the same compound responsible for the fresh smell of coffee is also responsible for the stale smell of coffee.
So we can smell something at that smaller...
Yeah, that's the other point. Yeah, we're actually quite sensitive. Our evolutionary detection systems have been designed to do that.
So you hear about sharks that can smell a drop of blood in an Olympic-sized swimming pool.
We know about furfural mercaptan.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not surprising, because furfural mercaptan has... so what that is, it's a thiol. And a thiol, think an alcohol, but instead of the oxygen, it's got sulfur. So a lot of the sulfur compounds, which our body actually requires sulfur, but in certain concentrations can become toxic.
Yeah.
Those thiols aren't necessarily toxic, you know, in detections that we can smell them. But again, anything with sulfur can be. So it's, I guess, a protection mechanism.
Like a volcano.
That's right. We know the exact...
a volcano can be
tasty.
Yeah, a bad egg,
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, right.
Stink bombs.
Yeah, well, it's a funny one. We also worked in a sulfur lab when I was at MIT. And we had detectors at about 10 part per billion. Apparently, if you could... was it H2S, hydrogen sulfide? If you could smell it, you're basically dead.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so what happens is if you smell it... Within 10 seconds, the detectors in your nose actually die, and then you die a little while afterwards. So by the time you smell it, you basically got seconds to live.
Right.
So we had to be very careful with sulfur.
Yes.
So in that case, that's,
Yeah, yeah. But you know, moving away from that, back to coffee freshness.
on a lighter note.
On a lighter note, when should you drink a coffee?
Never, I think.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, let's not go back to that California incident when we're talking about acrylamide. That's a different thing. But yeah, going back to the sort of the chemistry of staling, you know, one of the tests that we did, and we didn't necessarily do a chemical detection test for the first round of our freshness studies. We just simply looked at is there a consensus that we can reach around the coffees that we make? You know, be it light, medium, dark coffee. You know, is there some time that makes the most sense to drink it? And when is the peak in sort of taste?
Yeah.
Because we know it to a certain point it's good to age it. And after a certain point it's, you know, less good in terms of a taste.
Yeah, and taste is always subjective as well. So yeah. we had a mixed panel of coffee drinkers and roasters.
It was about five or six. Five or six people in the end that tasted it.
Yeah.
We measured variability. And this is, by the way, the results of these ones are on our blog, on our editorial piece. But we found that if you do not gas flush a coffee, and I think we're going to talk a bit more about gas flushing a little later. If you don't gas flush a coffee, about 2 weeks is prime drinking time. And it didn't matter if it was dark, light, or medium roasted. Within the error bars, they're about the same. Yeah, that's right. The second week was great. But if a coffee was gas flushed, as in if it was purged with nitrogen, and we found that it peaked actually, the best drinking time, it was pretty difficult to drink actually within a week. Yeah. But after 2 weeks, it was acceptable. And then at 4 weeks and beyond, it was delicious. And it maintained that deliciousness even beyond 8 weeks. Yeah.
That's proving its point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's why gas flushing occurs.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, when gas flushing, I mean, Julian, you've been around. You've got some history.
I think. A little bit, yes. Let me just start by saying that, you know, the essential difference between tea and coffee is that tea is produced from a leaf.
Mm.
Coffee is produced from a berry. May I say, not a bean, which is a misnomer.
Mm. That's true.
Tea is, you know, can be drinkably fresh for months or even years without special conditioning. Coffee without conditioning will only last maximum 4 days when already ground, or in bean form, only fresh for a maximum of weeks.
If just left sort of untouched and put sort of on a bench kind of thing.
I just illustrate, for instance, Andy, our chairman, and I tasted a tea some years ago, which came from a sealed tin left over from the Second World War army issue. And whilst it wasn't particularly pleasant, it was certainly not unpleasant, and it certainly wasn't bad. And that had been packed in air all those years.
Hadn't gone mouldy or anything.
None of those things. So, you know, in many canteens or even cafes, you probably would have drunk it. So that sort of leads me really to an essence we've discussed around quite a lot, and that is the difference. The whole question of maintaining the freshness of coffee. It so happens that I worked in England for many years for a company called Kenco, previously the Kenya Coffee Company, and one of the leading lights there was Ron Champion, who in 1962, and he was an industrial chemist and therefore well-placed to confront the challenge of finding a way to keep ground coffee fresh beyond a couple of weeks, talking about ground coffee here.
Go to the industrial chemists.
That was the market in England, was for ground coffee rather than beans. There were no supermarkets in the UK in those days, and most coffee was roasted and ground fresh daily in grocer's shops, where its hypnotic aroma wafted down the high street of every town to draw customers in. A double whammy.
Hypnotic. I like that.
But in order to send coffee to the newly emerging cafes and restaurants after the war across Britain and indeed other parts of the world, a method was required to keep as much of the freshness of ground coffee in the bag as possible, bearing in mind that the coffee was mostly ground in the factory and not by the end user. This innovation and its successors is still used for worldwide ground coffee packaging with nitrogen conditioning and long life freshness protection, where a lot of coffee is still sold pre-ground for plungers, filters, etc.
So I think one of the things just to mention sort of in this sort of point in terms of what is nitrogen flushing, I'm not sure if we actually introduced what that is.
No.
So in our factory, for example, we have a system, I'm pretty sure I can say this.
It's no secret.
I don't think it's any secret. This is obviously Ron Champion would probably, hopefully he's not.
I think the patent's up by now.
Even the patent's up. I mean, anyway, whatever. The point is, when we generally make the bag around the coffee bags, or at least bags filled with coffee, we have a valve that basically injects nitrogen into the system, thereby pushing out oxygen.
Yeah.
And then it's sealed very quickly after.
Yeah.
So that there's a nitrogen-rich atmosphere around
the
right. coffee beans.
The point is that Kenco's system was the first in the world for protection of fresh food, let alone coffee, which would, you know, fresh food would go stale quickly if it's not protected in some way or consumed, and which would otherwise require storage.
Yeah.
Hence, for example, strawberries from Kenya, I mean, an unknown concept 2 years ago, commencing in the 1970s, came in packages which were enclosed in an atmosphere of nitrogen.
Yeah, right.
And that allowed them to be transported long distances.
Interesting.
Makes sense.
I mean, the previous patent to the one which Ron Champion took out in 1962, which was only for preserving eggs, was in 1931.
Yeah,
well, there was a very, very long gap in between.
And
the great thing about his method, which was to condition the coffee for a long period of time in nitrogen and then pack it in a nitrogen atmosphere, was that it prevented people or discouraged people from putting a hole in the bag in order to prevent the thing from blowing up. So that was a great advance, and strangely enough, by sheer coincidence, Golio in Italy, in Milan, which was a company founded in 1850, making paper bags and later laminates before scientific involvement in freshness challenges, he also patented in the same year, in 1962, by happenstance, together with the Kenco process, the one-way valve technology, which led the way in the preservation of freshness for coffee beans, as opposed to ground coffee.
Yeah, so once coffee's roasted, it lets off a lot of gases that if you leave in an enclosed environment, builds up pressure and then pops. So
you're pretty important to have a one-way valve. You've
probably seen
something
the little nodules on the bags of coffee that you buy.
That's the one-way valve invented by Golio.
Sure. So I mean, the marketing aspect, of course, is that it proved vital in the export of roasted coffee beans from Europe to destinations in emerging countries and societies around the world, where coffee roasting and packaging was an extremely primitive business. So, you know, freezing coffee was not favoured by Italians, who were and still are wedded to the use of fresh food whenever possible.
It's interesting. It's interesting you bring up the topic of freezing food. I think we'll talk about this maybe a little bit. But as a means of preservation, moving from nitrogen flushing and freezing, you know, it's obviously people are starting to rediscover freezing in some senses in the word in Australia, which we've got some pretty...
A bit on trend.
And, you know, I think we obviously have some preliminary results for something else that perhaps we'll discuss shortly. I get a bit fired up when it comes to
freezing, of course, is that it's the lazy way out, in the sense that you don't have to consume fresh food immediately.
And
you can find another way of pretending that it's fresh by freezing it in the first place.
Doesn't always work. Didn't sell it, freeze it.
No, I mean, certainly when it comes to the valve in Australia, early adopters of valve technology were no doubt influenced by Golio being Italian, and the Italian diaspora, who were largely centred in Melbourne, had the ability to compete in distribution to other cities and states in Australia.
Yes, right.
Which, as we know, is a very big country. And for many years, of course, the other thing is, for many years, Golio also held the rights to the machinery needed to produce the valve. So all customers had to buy preformed bags from Italy with valve already inserted and sent from the other side of the world.
It's the price for quality, Julian.
Master stroke by Golio.
Look, hey, if you put all that effort into inventing a one-way valve that can be mass manufactured, I mean, good on him. I like my fresh coffee.
Anyway, now real material is produced in Australia, but we still buy the valves from overseas and insert them on site.
But we still use Golio valves, I'm pretty sure.
Indeed we do. That's right, yeah. Right. I mean, it's a huge cost saving in sea miles.
That's right.
Huge cost saving in sea miles from the laminate material point of view for roasters worldwide, not just ourselves in Australia.
Crazy. When did vacuum sealing come in? Do we know? Because, I mean, you see pre-ground vacuum sealed bricks of coffee at the grocery store.
Well, of course, they've been drawing vacuums on meat. For a very, very long time. So no doubt it would have come from some other food processing, I would imagine.
I would have thought vacuum sealing, just from a technical standpoint, would be the opposite of what you'd want to do.
I think, especially for ground coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Especially for ground any coffee, right? I mean, because the atmosphere that it generates in itself, you know, vacuum kind of draws it out. And a lot of those volatiles get drawn off by a vacuum. Yeah. A lot of things boil. You know, you reduce the boiling temperature, a lot of materials, water included, but, you know, also a whole lot of volatiles that you really need to make up a good portion of the aroma.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Adam will love this, of course, because when, yeah. when Golio actually patented the one-way valve to allow for non-pressurized degassing of coffee, he could not have envisaged that it would not soon be superseded. And that's over 50 years and counting.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, right.
And they would have found a better way.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, you can argue that in their Illy tins with their positive pressure systems, where they completely sealed it off, you know, maybe that's... Yeah. I mean, Illy argues that it's superior. Yeah.
Well, it's different. I mean, it's certainly a departure from all the above.
Yeah.
And the can system, which allows for the aging of coffee beans over months of storage, where the natural CO2 is maintained or retained in the can together with other gases which are naturally there. And the result, of course, is a different coffee.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, generally speaking, very pleasant to drink.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Absolutely. Look, and all these inventions, the attempt to keep coffee fresh. I mean, for the most part, they generally tend to work. Well, we've certainly found that they work.
Well, otherwise they would be discarded, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, I suppose, that's right. Well, maybe. There's always hype. There's always hype. I mean, for being only 1 year in the coffee business, there's a whole lot of things.
You're more cynical than I am.
Oh, yeah. It's only taking me a short time.
We're just trying to do what Jenny said in the last episode and remove the fluff.
Well, that's why CSEC. Yeah, that's why the Coffee Science and Education Centre exists. I mean, that's why I'm here, just to, to try and help with that. So I always got to double check myself as well. If I've got an opinion, I've got to make sure I read stuff up about it.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that I'm not speaking.
Yeah. So you're a customer, reference. You're looking to buy coffee for your home machine.
Mm.
You walk into a roastery or a cafe and you see some roasted coffee on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a date on it, which is good. Maybe it's already 2 weeks old. Maybe it's on its 14th day.
Mm-hmm.
So
go ahead and buy it.
Yeah,
that's what we'd recommend anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, whether or not it's gas flushed,
even if it takes you 2 weeks to get through it,
yeah,
it's still going to be good. I mean, like in my experience with using coffee, that is a month. I mean, we still have coffee from when Jenny and Andy went to Germany in the UK, and we're still doing batch brews with it, and it's still coming out really nice, and that's almost 2 months old now.
Yeah.
So you do see maybe a dip in quality, but still very drinkable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the other thing is also to say that, you know, taste is also a very subjective thing. I mean, you know, we've done, you know, for our studies when we did them, we said 2 weeks and then 4 weeks for gas flush, you know, in terms of optimum.
Yeah.
That was based on the average that we found for the Australian palate for people that work in the roastery. And, you know, that was also for the three coffees we tested, which were, I think it was Bellaroma Octavia blend, we had Tatsina Cafe blend, and Cultivar was our slightly lighter roasted coffee. Those are the ones that we tried.
Yeah.
I think you could you could interpolate between them more or less. But again, for someone in Italy or Colombia, trying those coffees, maybe they like it fresher, maybe they like it longer aged, you know. So it comes, all these things come with a caveat, especially when it comes to taste.
Yeah, you get different flavours either way.
Yeah, you definitely do, and they develop over time.
Yeah, and I think it's certainly true to say, you know, if a product is, as it were, too fresh or too new, it often tastes quite foreign to the average consumer who are not used to it. I mean, when I worked for Cadbury's, for instance, we used to have tasting panels up in Bourneville, and the coffee and the chocolate would come off the line there, and we'd all gobble that up and think it was wonderful.
Yeah. Mm.
And then we'd go out and buy a bar in a shop somewhere down the street. It tasted totally different.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's it. So sort of moving back into the storage and cold storage, we kind of touched on, we wanted to have a look at, you know, what about cold storage?
Yeah.
So I think some of the background in this is...
It's a very common question.
It's a common question. I think there are...
Fridge, freezer or cupboard.
Well, that's right. And I think that's one of the other things. I think there are two aspects to it. Number one, you know, how once you've opened a bag of coffee, yeah, you would expect it to stale faster because all that effort that's gone into trying to preserve it inside the bag and lock in the freshness, you open that bag up and, you know, that's, you know, all bets are off kind of thing. Yeah, what happens after that?
Because oxygen is your worst enemy when it comes to freshness.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially true, of course, with ground coffee rather than beans. I mean, there is an essential difference between the two.
Yeah.
You know, you have to make that separation, I think.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I think so. So in terms of that, so maybe we'll address that first. The second one comes to kind of current trends and sort of cold storage and some of the claims being made and what we're trying to do about it. So in terms of opening the bag and storing it on the, you know, how does one store it? I mean, Julian, what's been sort of your
Well, my experience is at home is that I take coffee beans and somewhere I grind them. Either grind them at work and take them with me, or I grind them at home, yeah, and I put them into a sealed container. In my case, it's actually a marmalade jar with a good sealed lid on top, and I put it in the fridge, and it's away from all other smells of food in the fridge.
Yeah.
And I will open that up for maybe two or three times during the course of a week and have coffee made from that,
yeah,
and I find it perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
Not the freezer. I personally find that whilst you can preserve coffee in a freezer, it certainly appears to me to actually alter the flavour of it once you've actually thawed it out and made it up in whatever method you happen to use.
Yeah.
So I would advocate not freezing coffee personally.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah, it makes some sense from a theoretical standpoint in some ways. You know, we actually did some flavour testing around this. We're doing it currently, and the blog's going to come out probably in a couple of weeks about this. But I was surprised that after we opened a bag of coffee and put it wound the bag up and put it, cool, dry place, kind of just in the dark cupboard, versus actually doing the exact same thing and putting it in the freezer, there was a significant decline. It was a very tangible decline, even in the variability of the tasters, in the quality of the coffee coming out of the freezer. And my hypothesis, at least, if I could use that word, is that once you open the bag, you reintroduce it to atmospheric conditions. The atmosphere obviously contains water, contains oxygen.
Yeah.
When you put it back in the freezer, all the water that's come in from the oxygen, because coffee is effectively like a sponge.
Yes.
Coffee comes out relatively dry. You pack it off pretty quick, so no water gets in there. So it absorbs a lot of water. And I wonder if putting it back in the freezer freezes all that additional water in the coffee, and actually can either lead to partially to freezer burn, or just the simple act of freezing it just completely changes that taste, absorbing whatever flavours are in the atmosphere.
Yeah,
getting back
I'm sure
into
you're
coffee.
Right, but of course I think the other thing is that if you put coffee in a jam jar in the fridge, you're opening the fridge several times a day and you see it when you look in there.
Yeah.
You put coffee in a freezer, you might forget about that for months.
Well, it could also be that. I mean, we did control that, Julian. We didn't just forget about it the day. It's like, oh, that's right, we put it in the freezer. No, we tried that.
But certainly domestically, that's the kind of thing that happens.
Yeah, for sure.
It gets pushed to the back.
Well, results on that are continuing, of course, but it does seem anecdotally, and in fact some of the preliminary data we have, that freezer is not the best place to store your open bag coffee, either on the shelf or in a sealed thing in the fridge, which makes some sense to me. And those results will come out.
Yeah,
shortly.
I think the only person who would have objected to that would have probably been Scott of the Antarctic, who had
no option. Oh, Scott, what will you ever learn? I mean, another thing sort of bringing up on this is there's a current thing that seems to be on trend in freezing coffee in a cafe setting. So freezing fresh coffee and then putting it in a grinder, grinding it out and putting it in the coffee machine and then extracting.
Yeah, so grinding frozen coffee.
Yeah, so Josh, I mean, where's that sort of come from? I mean, what was the...
I think there's been a couple of studies done by different grinder manufacturers. I think Malkinig did one. And there is a talk on YouTube, I'll try and find the link and put it in the show notes, about their experience with grinding frozen coffee and distribution of particle size that comes from that. And Anfim spoke about that last night, how that when you grind cold frozen coffee, you get a lower or smaller distribution of particle size.
Narrower.
So you're not getting as many big particles or as many smaller particles. And they said that would increase the cleanness of the cup and let you extract a little bit more without getting those negative flavors.
That's right. I did read that paper, and I remember there was actually no...
I haven't tried it.
I don't recall actually reading or seeing any data on actual how they could define clarity or cleanness. It's one of those things where you had a couple of tasters.
Anecdotal, right?
Yeah, it's also, it was...
I mean, you might imagine that it also plays havoc with the life of the blades.
Yeah.
Possibly, yeah.
Well, it's an interesting one. Yeah, that's right. So it's interesting. Well, what kind of effect would that have? It's probably too complex to understand. But the interesting about that paper is that they put it down to minus 192 degrees Celsius, minus 60 degrees Celsius, and,
minus 100.
Yeah. Well, there's a temperature.
So you'd be grinding gravel to begin with.
Well, I mean, they're frozen in liquid nitrogen. That's how they achieve that. Well, that's right. But, I mean, from what I could see in the paper, though, I mean, in terms of the distribution changes, I didn't see any repeats, so I'm not sure how much of that's got to do with... I haven't done a study.
Whether they did them and didn't share... or whether they haven't done it because it's hard to get a hold of those sort of resources.
Well, practically. And the other thing is also that I always had a question with this. Was the extraction and clarity of flavour because they actually put the frozen coffee into the espresso machine and extracted it cold?
Yeah.
Because you think about it, you put minus 192 Celsius degree coffee grounds inside a portafilter, you lock it into your machine and push go.
Yeah.
You got something extracting initially at minus 192 Celsius. You're actually... the hot water you put in there, it's going to be frozen for the first little bit.
Yeah.
So is it actually because the average extraction temperature was lower? Or is it because of the actual particle size distribution change? I mean, that remains unclear to me.
Possibly.
Yeah. And you would have thought that the puck would be almost a sort of a frozen solid in itself.
Yeah. Well, yeah exactly.
Turn into an ice cube.
Exactly. It's an ice cube. Yeah. And you know, I would certainly advocate, you know, because I think cooler grinding conditions would make a lot of sense anecdotally for the reduction in the loss of volatiles and other things in coffee. But you know, the effect of the frozen coffee on the extraction. I mean, I'd argue that you might get the same result if you just
drop
the temperature in your espresso machine to extract at 30 degrees, 40 degrees rather than, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you brew.
You almost have an accelerated cold brew.
You add
so you have a warm brew.
You have a warm brew, a tepid brew.
Yeah, because like, even at ambient temperature ground coffee, once you hit the button, the hot water hits the ambient temperature beans, there's going to be a drop in temperature, and then it's going to slowly climb back up to the temperature of the hot water.
That's right.
So yeah, you're going to have a bigger dip if the ground coffee is less than ambient. So then maybe it climbs all the way back up to the 93
probably
degrees or whatever.
Yes, but over time,
if you give it long
or
enough,
or maybe it doesn't even. So you're brewing it different.
I smell a simulation coming up.
Yeah. So then, like the first
fluid dynamics and
another job for you there.
I know. I give myself stuff to do.
Sounds simple, but like the first part of your extraction, the acids and the oils and the little particles that come through at the beginning are brewing at a lower temperature to
the
larger molecules that are brewing at the end that need a bit more time.
Yeah.
And your dry distillates and that sort of stuff. So, espresso is hard, man.
It's a complex business. Even doing it in a brew without espresso is interesting. Anyway, is it better to, you know, there's, you know, again, getting back to sort of what's been said out there, you know, is coffee better having it, you know, frozen? Or is it, you know, can you preserve an amazing coffee that was roasted 2 years ago, you know, for 2 years and then get the same quality out? I mean, our results initially suggest no, you can't. Yeah. The other thing I'd like to challenge whoever's trying to do that, can you actually prove it?
Yeah, please. Please prove it.
Please prove it if you can, because one of those things, like, you know, you're going to have to do it against a known standard. You know, get the 2-week-old or whatever, the 3-week-old coffee, whatever you think it tasted better before it was frozen. Compare that taste to the taste of the 2-year-old coffee. Again, assuming there's no varietal differences, assume differences in farming can be negated, shipping, processing, roasting. It's going to be really hard to do.
Above sea level.
Above sea level. So, look, I mean, I think our take would be drink the coffee as fresh.
Always.
It's not as fresh as you can.
We've
discussed that.
Drink your coffee and think about
source
what
local.
You're tasting.
That's right.
And see what you like. Yeah.
See if you can get it to be that way all the time.
Yeah.
Age your coffee, but don't keep it too long.
Try some old coffee.
And for guys, people at home, please store your coffee. I think just from what we've seen initially, we'll clarify this if results change. But try and drink your storing your coffee, just rolling it up in the bag or even putting in a marmalade jar or a jam jar or something, locking it away from oxygen in a cool, dry place. The fridge, the cupboard seems to be the best way. Freezer, we would suggest to avoid.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, from another point of view, a former owner of this business had a maxim, and that was with regard to coffee, two questions. Does it taste like coffee? Does it taste nice?
And
if the answer to both of those questions is yes, then you've probably got something that you would enjoy.
agree. And that's the other thing. Taste is definitely a personal thing.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Well, that's a lot of talk about freshness.
We could probably talk more, but I think we should keep it at that.
Thanks
so much for listening. This is Adam the Science, Josh.
Send us an email, Julian, if you have any topics questions. Send us an email at
don't make them too difficult, because we're only human here.
We'll try and answer.
We give the difficult ones to Adam anyway. Podcast at 7miles.com.au. Send us a message on social media, or come in and say hello.
Come and grab a coffee from our espresso window just
Monday
down
to Friday, 7:30 to 11:30. Sometimes you'll catch us after that, because we're always around doing
work. Take a brewing course as well if you want.
Come do training.
Always good things.
Do a brewing course.
I've got a lot of things to offer here. So
if you're a barista and you want to get into filter, come do the SEA class, because it'll blow your mind.
And even if you want to do it shorter, we even have our own 7-mile brewing classes as well.
Just come learn more.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
And it's goodbye from her, and it's goodbye from me.
That's right.